he whispered, closing his eyes. Please, help me, please. Only then did Luce realize she wasn't in Moscow anymore. The ground below her was warmer. Not snow-covered, but a grassy plain that was torn up in places, exposing rich black soil. The air was dry and dusty. This boy had spoken to her in Italian, and just as she had in Moscow, she understood. Her eyes had adjusted. She could see searchlights in the distance, roaming over purple-hued hills. And beyond the hills, an evening sky was flecked with bright white stars. Luce turned away. She couldn't see stars without thinking of Daniel, and she couldn't think about Daniel right now. Not with her hands pressed into this boy's belly, not with him about to die. At least he hadn't died yet. He only thought he had. She couldn't blame him. After he'd been hit, he'd probably gone into shock. And then maybe he'd seen her come through the announcer, a black tunnel appearing out of thin air. He must have been terrified. "You're going to be fine," she said, using the perfect Italian she'd always wanted to learn. It felt astonishingly natural on her tongue. Her voice, too, came out softer and smoother than she expected. It made her wonder what she'd been like in this lifetime. A barrage of deafening shots made her jump. Gunfire. Endless, in quick succession, bright zipping tracers arcing through the sky, burning lines of white into her vision, followed by a lot of shouting in Italian. Then the thump of footsteps in the dirt, coming closer.
"We're retreating," the boy mumbled. "That's not good."
Luce looked toward the sound of soldiers running in their direction and noticed, for the first time, that she and the injured soldier were not alone. At least 10 other men lay wounded around them, moaning and trembling and bleeding into the black earth. Their clothes were singed and shredded from the landmine that must have taken them by surprise. The rich stink of rot and sweat and blood sat heavy in the air, coating everything. It was so horrific, Luce had to bite down on her lip to keep from screaming. A man in an officer's uniform ran past her, then stopped.
"What's she doing here? This is a war zone, not a place for nurses. You'll be no help to us dead, girl. This is a war zone, not a place for nurses. You'll be no help to us dead, girl. At least make yourself useful. We need the casualties loaded up."
He stormed off before Luce could respond. Below her, the boy's eyes were beginning to droop, and his whole body was shaking. She looked around desperately for help. About a half mile away was a narrow dirt road, with two ancient-looking trucks and two small, squat ambulances parked at its side. "I'll be right back," Luce told the boy, pressing his hands more firmly against his stomach to control the bleeding. He whimpered when she pulled away. She ran toward the trucks, stumbling over her feet when another shell came down behind her, making the earth buck. A cluster of women in white uniforms stood gathered around the back of one of the trucks. Nurses. They would know what to do, how to help. But when Luce got close enough to see their faces, her heart sank. They were girls. Some of them couldn't have been older than 14. Their uniforms looked like costumes. She scanned their faces, looking for herself in one of them. There must have been a reason why she'd stepped into this hell, but no one looked familiar. It was hard to fathom the girl's calm, clear expressions. Not one of them showed the terror that Luce knew was clear on her own face. Maybe they had already seen enough of the war to grow used to what it did.
"Water."
An older woman's voice came from inside the truck.
"Bandages. Gauze."
She was distributing supplies to the girls, who loaded up, then set to work putting together a makeshift clinic on the side of the road. A row of injured men had already been moved behind the truck for treatment. More were on the way. Luce joined the line for supplies. It was dark, and no one said a word to her. She could feel it now, the stress of the young nurses. They must have been trained to keep a poised, calm facade for the soldiers, but when the girl in front of Luce reached up to take her ration of supplies, her hands were shaking. Around them, soldiers moved quickly in pairs, carrying the wounded under the arms and by the feet. Some of the men being carried mumbled questions about the battle, asking how badly they'd been hit.
Then there were the ones more seriously injured, whose lips could form no questions because they were too busy biting off screams, who had to be hoisted by the waist because one or both of their legs had been blown off by a landmine.
Water.
A jug landed in Luce's arms.
Bandages. Gauze.
The head nurse dumped the ration of supplies mechanically, ready to move on to the next girl. But then she didn't. She fixed her gaze on Luce. Her eyes traveled downward, and Luce realized she was still wearing the heavy wool coat from Lushka's grandmother in Moscow. Which was a good thing, because underneath the coat were her jeans and button-down shirt from her current life.
Uniform, the woman finally said, in the same monotone, tossing down a white dress and a nurse's cap, like the other girls were wearing.
Luce nodded gratefully, then ducked behind a truck to change. It was a billowing white gown that reached her ankles and smelled strongly of bleach. She tried to wipe the soldier's blood off her hands, using the wool coat, then tossed it behind a tree. But by the time she'd buttoned the nurse's uniform, rolled up the sleeves, and tied the belt around her waist, it was completely covered with rusty red streaks. She grabbed the supplies and ran back across the road. The scene before her was gruesome. The officer hadn't been lying. There were at least 100 men who needed help. She looked at the bandages in her arms and wondered what it was she should be doing.
Nurse! A man called out.
He was sliding a stretcher into the back of an ambulance.
Nurse! This one needs a nurse!
Luce realized that he was talking to her.
Oh, she said faintly.
Me?
She peered into the ambulance. It was cramped and dark inside. A space that looked like it had been made for two people now held six. The wounded soldiers were laid out on stretchers, slid into three-tiered slings on either side. There was no place for Luce, except on the floor. Someone was shoving her to the side, a man, sliding another stretcher onto the small, empty space on the floor. The soldier laid out on it was unconscious, his black hair plastered across his face.
Go on, the soldier said to Luce. It's leaving now.
When she didn't move, he pointed to a wooden stool affixed to the inside of the ambulance's back door with a crisscrossed rope. He bent down and made a stirrup with his hands to help Luce up onto the stool. Another shell shook the ground, and Luce couldn't hold back the scream that escaped her lips. She glanced apologetically at the soldier, took a deep breath, and hopped up. When she was seated on the tiny stool, he handed up the jug of water and the box of gauze and bandages. He started to shut the door.
Wait, Luce whispered. What do I do?
The man paused.
You know how long the ride to Milan is. Dress their wounds and keep them comfortable. Do the best you can.
The door slammed with Luce on it. She had to grip the stool to keep from falling off and landing on the soldier at her feet. The ambulance was stifling hot. It smelled terrible. The only light came from a small lantern hanging from a nail in the corner. The only window was directly behind her head on the inside of the door. She didn't know what had happened to Giovanni, the boy with the bullet in his stomach. Whether she'd ever see him again. Whether he'd live through the night. The engine started up. The ambulance shifted into gear and lurched forward. The soldier on one of the top slings began to moan. After they'd reached a steady speed, Luce heard the pattering sound of a leak. Something was dripping. She leaned forward on the stool, squinting in the dim lantern light. It was the blood of the soldier on the top bunk, dripping through the woven sling onto the soldier in the middle bunk. The middle soldier's eyes were open. He was watching the blood fall on his chest, but he was injured so badly that he couldn't move away. He didn't make a sound. Not until the trickle of blood turned into a stream. Luce whimpered along with the soldier. She started to rise from her stool, but there was no place for her to stand, unless she straddled the soldier on the floor. Carefully, she wedged her feet around his chest. As the ambulance shuddered along the bumpy dirt road, she gripped the taut canvas of the top sling and held a fistful of gauze against its bottom. The blood soaked through onto her fingers within seconds.
Help!
she called to the ambulance driver. She didn't know if he'd even be able to hear her.
What is it?
The driver had a thick, regional accent.
This man back here, he's hemorrhaging. I think he's dying.
We're all dying, gorgeous,
the driver said.
Really? He was flirting with her now?
A second later, he turned around, glancing at her through the opening behind the driver's seat.
Look, I'm sorry, but there's nothing to do. I've got to get the rest of these guys to the hospital.
He was right. It was already too late. When Luce took her hand away from under the stretcher, the blood began to gush again. So heavily, it didn't seem possible. Luce had no words of comfort for the boy in the middle sling, whose eyes were wide and petrified, and whose lips whispered a furious Ave Maria. The stream of the other boy's blood dripped down his sides, pooling in the space where his hips met the sling. Luce wanted to close her eyes and disappear. She wanted to sift through the shadows cast by the lantern to find an announcer that would take her somewhere else, anywhere else. Like the beach on the rocks below Shoreline's campus, where Daniel had taken her dancing on the ocean under the stars, or the pristine swimming hole she'd glimpsed the two of them diving into when she'd worn the yellow bathing suit. She would have taken sword and cross over this ambulance, even the roughest moments, like the night she'd gone to meet Cam at that bar, like when she'd kissed him. She would even have taken Moscow. This was worse. She'd never faced anything like this before. Except... Of course she had. She must already have lived through something almost exactly like this. It was why she'd ended up here. Somewhere in this war-torn world was the girl who died and came back to life and went on to become her. She was certain of it. She must have dressed wounds and carried water and suppressed the urge to vomit. It gave Luce strength to think about the girl who'd lived through this before. The stream of blood began to trickle, then became a very slow drip. The boy beneath had fainted, so Luce watched silently by herself for a long time, until the dripping stopped completely. Then she reached for a towel and the water and began to wash the soldier in the middle bunk. It had been a while since he'd had a bath. Luce washed him gently and changed the bandage around his head. When he came to, she gave him sips of water. His breathing evened, and he stopped staring up at the sling above him in terror. He seemed to grow more comfortable. All of the soldiers seemed to find some comfort as she tended to them, even the one in the middle of the floor, who never opened his eyes. She cleaned the face of the boy in the top bunk who had died. She couldn't explain why. She wanted him to be more at peace, too. It was impossible to tell how much time had passed. All Luce knew was that it was dark and rank, and her back ached, and her throat was parched, and she was exhausted, and she was better off than any of the men surrounding her. She'd left the soldier on the bottom left-hand stretcher until last. He'd been hit badly in the neck, and Luce was worried that he would lose even more blood if she tried to redress the wound. She did the best she could, sitting on the side of his sling and sponging down his grimy face, washing some of the blood out of his blonde hair. He was handsome under all the mud, very handsome. But she was distracted by his neck, which was still bleeding through the gauze. Every time she even got near it, he cried out in pain.
"Don't worry," she whispered. "You're going to make it."
"I know."
His whisper came so quietly and sounded so impossibly sad that Luce wasn't sure she'd heard him right. Until then, she'd thought he was unconscious, but something in her voice seemed to reach him. His eyelids fluttered. Then, slowly, they opened. They were violet. The jug of water fell from her hands.
"Daniel."
Her instinct was to crawl in next to him and cover his lips with kisses, to pretend he wasn't as badly wounded as he was. At the sight of her, Daniel's eyes widened, and he started to sit up. But then the blood began to flow from his neck again, and his face drained of all its color. Luce had no choice but to restrain him.
"Shh."
She pressed his shoulders back against the stretcher, trying to get him to relax. He squirmed under her grip. Every time he did, bright new blood bloomed through the bandage. Daniel, you have to stop fighting, she begged. Please stop fighting. For me. They locked eyes for a long, intense moment, and then the ambulance came to an abrupt stop. The back door swung open. A shocking breath of fresh air flowed in. The streets outside were quiet, but the place had the feel of a big city, even in the middle of the night. Milan. That was where the soldier had said they were going when he assigned her to this ambulance. They must be at a hospital in Milan. Two men in army uniforms appeared at the doors and began sliding the stretchers out with quick precision. Within minutes, the wounded were placed on rolling carts and wheeled off. The men pushed Luce out of the way so they could ease out Daniel's stretcher. His eyelids were fluttering again, and she thought he reached out his hand for her. She watched from the back of the ambulance until he disappeared from sight. Then she began to tremble.
Are you all right?
A girl popped her head inside. She was fresh and pretty, with a small red mouth and long dark hair pulled into a low twist. Her nurse's dress was more fitted than the one Luce was wearing, and so white and clean it made Luce aware of how bloody and muddy she was. Luce hopped to her feet. She felt like she'd been caught doing something embarrassing.
I'm fine, she said quickly. I just...
You don't have to explain, the girl said.
Her face fell as she looked around the inside of the ambulance.
I can tell it was a bad one.
Luce stared as the girl heaved a bucket of water into the ambulance, then hoisted herself inside. She got to work immediately, scrubbing down the bloodied slings, mopping the floor, sending waves of red-tinged water out the back door. She replaced the soiled linens in the cabinet with clean ones and added more gas to the lantern. She couldn't have been older than 13. Luce stood up to help, but the girl waved her off.
Sit down, rest. You just got transferred here, didn't you?
Hesitantly, Luce nodded.
Were you all alone coming from the front?
The girl stopped cleaning for a moment, and when she looked at Luce, her hazel eyes brimmed with compassion. Luce started to reply, but her mouth was so dry she couldn't speak. How had it taken her this long to recognize that she was looking at herself?
I was, she managed to whisper. I was all alone.
The girl smiled.
Well, you're not anymore. There's a bunch of us here at the hospital. We've got all the nicest nurses and the handsomest patients. You won't mind it, I don't think.
She started to extend her hand, but then looked down and realized how dirty it was. She giggled and picked up her mop again.
I'm Lucia.
I know, Luce stopped herself from saying.
I'm...
Her mind went blank. She tried to think of one name, any name that would work.
I'm Doria, she finally said,
almost her mother's name.
Do you know, where do they take the soldiers who are in here?
Oh, you're not already in love with one of them, are you? Lucia teased. New patients get taken to the East Ward for vitals.
The East Ward, Luce repeated to herself. But you should go see Miss Fierro at the nurse's station. She does the registration and the scheduling.
Lucia giggled again and lowered her voice, leaning toward Luce.
And the doctor on Tuesday afternoons.
All Luce could do was stare at Lucia. Up close, her past self was so real, so alive, so very much the kind of girl Luce would have befriended instantly, if the circumstances had been any shade of normal. She wanted to reach out and hug Lucia, but she was overcome by an indescribable fear. She'd cleaned the wounds of 7 half-dead soldiers, including the love of her life, but she was unsure what to do when it came to Lucia. The girl seemed too young to know any of the secrets Luce was searching for, about the curse, about the outcasts. Luce feared she'd only frighten Lucia if she started talking about reincarnation and heaven. There was something about Lucia's eyes, something about her innocence. Luce realized that Lucia knew even less than she did. She stepped down from the ambulance and backed away.
It was nice to meet you, Doria, Lucia called.
But Luce was already gone. It took 6 wrong rooms, 3 startled soldiers, and 1 toppled over medicine cabinet before Luce found him. Daniel was sharing a room in the East Ward with 2 other soldiers. One was a silent man whose entire face had been bandaged. The other was snoring loudly, a bottle of whiskey, not very well hidden under his pillow, 2 broken legs raised in a sling. The room itself was bare and sterile, but it had a window that looked out onto a broad city avenue lined with orange trees. Standing over his bed, watching him sleep, Luce could see it, the way their love would have bloomed here. She could see Lucia coming in to bring Daniel his meals, him opening up to her slowly, the pair being inseparable by the time Daniel recovered. And it made her feel jealous and guilty and confused, because she couldn't tell right now whether their love was a beautiful thing or whether this was yet another instance of how very wrong it was. If she was so young when they met, they must have had a long relationship in this life. She would have gotten to spend years with him before it happened, before she died and was reincarnated into another life completely. She must have thought they'd spend forever together, and must not even have known how long forever meant. But Daniel knew. He always knew. Luce sank down at the side of his bed, careful not to wake him. Maybe he hadn't always been so closed off and hard to reach. She'd just seen him in their Moscow life, whispering something to her at the critical moment before she died. Maybe if she could just talk to him in this life, he'd treat her differently than the Daniel she knew did. He might not hide so much from her. He might help her understand, might tell her the truth for a change. Then she could go back to the present, and there wouldn't have to be any more secrets. It was all she really wanted, for the two of them to love each other openly, and for her not to die. She reached out and touched his cheek. She loved his cheek. He was beat up and injured, and probably concussed, but his cheek was warm and smooth and, mostly, it was Daniel's. He was as gorgeous as ever. His face was so peaceful in his sleep that Luce could have stared at him from every angle for hours without ever getting bored. He was perfect to her. His perfect lips were just the same. When she touched them with her finger, they were so soft she had to lean down for a kiss. He didn't stir. She traced his jawline with her lips, kissed down the side of his neck that wasn't bruised, and across his collarbone. At the top of his right shoulder, her lips paused over a small white scar. It would have been almost indiscernible to anyone else, but Luce knew that this was the place from which Daniel's wings extended. She kissed the scar tissue. It was so hard to see him lying helpless on that hospital bed when she knew what he was capable of. With his wings wrapped around her, Luce always lost track of everything else. What she wouldn't give to see them unfurl now into the vast white splendor that seemed to steal all the light from a room. She laid her head on his shoulder, the scar hot against her skin. Her head shot up. She hadn't realized she'd drifted off until the stretcher, wheeling squeakily down the uneven wood floor in the hallway, startled her awake. What time was it? Sunlight streamed through the window onto the white sheets on the beds. She rotated her shoulder, trying to loosen a crick. Daniel was still asleep. The scar above his shoulder looked whiter in the morning light. Luce wanted to see the other side, the matching scar, but it was wrapped in gauze. At least the wound seemed to have stopped bleeding. The door opened, and Luce jerked up. Lucia was standing in the doorway, holding 3 covered trays stacked in her arms.
"Oh, you're here," she sounded surprised. "So they've already had breakfast, then?"
Luce blushed and shook her head. Lucia's eyes lit up.
"I know that look. You've got it bad for someone."
She put the breakfast trays on a cart and came to stand at Luce's side.
"Don't worry, I won't tell, so long as I approve."
She tilted her head to look at Daniel and stared at him hard for a long time. She didn't move or breathe. Sensing the girl's eyes widening at the sight of Daniel for the first time, Luce didn't know what to feel. Empathy, envy, grief, all of it was there.
He's heavenly.
Lucia sounded as if she might cry.
What's his name?
His name is Daniel.
Daniel,
the younger girl repeated, making the word sound holy as it left her lips.
Someday I'll meet a man like that. Someday I'll drive all of them crazy, just like you do, Doria.
What do you mean? Luce asked.
There's that other soldier 2 doors down.
Lucia addressed Luce without ever taking her eyes off Daniel.
You know, Giovanni?
Luce shook her head. She didn't.
The one who's about to go in for surgery. He keeps asking about you.
Giovanni, the boy who'd been shot in the stomach.
He's okay? Sure,
Lucia smiled.
I won't tell him you have a boyfriend.
She winked at Luce and pointed down at the breakfast trays.
I'll let you do the meals, she said on her way out. Find me later. I want to hear everything about you and Daniel. The whole story, all right?
Sure, Luce lied, her heart sinking a little. Alone with Daniel again, Luce was nervous. In her parents' backyard, after the battle with the outcasts, Daniel had seemed so horrified when he saw her step through the announcer. In Moscow, too. Who knew what this Daniel would do when he opened his eyes and found out where she'd come from? If he ever opened his eyes. She leaned down over his bed again. He had to open his eyes, didn't he? Angels couldn't die. Logically, she thought it was impossible. But what if... what if, by coming back in time, she'd messed something up? She'd seen the Back to the Future movies, and she'd once passed a test in science class on quantum physics. What she was doing here was probably messing up the space-time continuum. And Stephen Fillmore, the demon who co-taught humanities at Shoreline, had said something about altering time. She didn't really know what any of that meant, but she did know it could be very bad. Like, erase your whole existence bad. Or maybe, kill your angel boyfriend bad. That was when Luce panicked. Grabbing hold of Daniel's shoulders, she began to shake. Lightly, gently. He'd been through a war, after all. But enough to let him know that she needed a sign, right now.
Daniel, she whispered. Daniel?
There. His eyelids began to flutter. She let out her breath. His eyes opened slowly, like they had last night. And like last night, when they registered the girl in front of them, they bulged. His lips parted.
You're... old.
Luce blushed.
I am not, she said, laughing.
No one had ever called her old before.
Yes, you are. You're really old.
He looked almost disappointed. He rubbed his forehead.
I mean, how long have I been?
Then she remembered. Lucia was several years younger. But Daniel hadn't even met Lucia yet. How would he have known how old she was? Don't worry about that, she said. I need to tell you something, Daniel. I'm not who you think I am. I mean, I am, I guess. I always am. But this time I came from...
Daniel's face contorted. Of course. You stepped through to get here.
She nodded.
I had to.
I'd forgotten, he whispered,
confusing Luce even more.
From how far away? No, don't tell me.
He waved her off, inching back in his bed as if she had some sort of disease.
How is that even possible? There were no loopholes in the curse. You shouldn't be able to be here.
Loopholes? Luce asked. What kind of loopholes? I need to know.
I can't help you, he said, and coughed. You have to learn on your own. Those are the rules.
Doria!
A woman Luce had never seen was standing in the doorway. She was older, blonde and severe, with a starched Red Cross cap pinned so that it sat at an angle on her head. At first, Luce didn't realize that the woman was addressing her.
You are Doria, aren't you? The new transfer?
Yes, Luce said.
"We'll need to do your paperwork this morning," the woman said curtly. "I don't have any of your records. But first, you'll do me a favor."
Luce nodded. She could tell she was in trouble, but she had more important things to worry about than this woman and her paperwork.
"Private Bruno is going into surgery," the nurse said.
"Okay." Luce tried to focus on the nurse, but all she wanted was to go back to her conversation with Daniel. She had finally been getting somewhere, finally finding another piece in the puzzle of her lives.
"Private Giovanni Bruno? He's requested that the on-duty nurse be taken off his surgery. He says he's sweet on the nurse who saved his life. His angel?"
The woman gave Luce a hard look.
"The girls tell me that's you."
"No," Luce said. "I'm not..."
"Doesn't matter. It's what he believes."
The nurse pointed toward the door.
"Let's go."
Luce rose from Daniel's bed. He was looking away from her, out the window. She sighed.
"I have to talk to you," she whispered, though he didn't meet her gaze. "I'll be right back."
The surgery wasn't as awful as it could have been. All Luce had to do was hold Giovanni's small, soft hand and whisper things, pass a few instruments to the doctor, and try not to look when he reached into the dark red mass of Giovanni's exposed gut and extracted the bits of blood-sheathed shrapnel. If the doctor wondered about her evident lack of experience, he didn't say anything. She wasn't gone more than an hour. Just long enough to come back to Daniel's bed and find it empty. Lucia was changing the sheets. She rushed toward Luce, and Luce thought she was going to hug her. Instead, she collapsed at her feet.
"What happened?" Luce asked. "Where did he go?"
"I don't know."
The girl began to weep.
"He left. He just left. I don't know where."
She looked up at Luce, tears filling her hazel eyes.
"He said to tell you goodbye."
"He can't be gone," Luce said under her breath. They hadn't even had a chance to talk. Of course they hadn't. Daniel had known exactly what he was doing when he left. He didn't want to tell her the whole truth. He was hiding something. What were the rules he'd mentioned? And what loophole? Lucia's face was flushed. Her speech was broken up by hiccups.
"I know I shouldn't be crying, but I can't explain it. I feel like someone has died."
Luce recognized the feeling. They had that in common. When Daniel left, both girls were inconsolable. Luce balled up her fists, feeling angry and despondent.
"Don't be childish."
Luce blinked, thinking at first that the girl was speaking to her, but then she realized Lucia was chiding herself. Luce straightened, holding her trembling shoulders high again, as if she were trying to recover the calm poise the nurses had shown.
"Lucia."
Luce reached for the girl, moving to embrace her. But the girl inched away, turning from Luce to face Daniel's empty bed.
"I'm fine."
She went back to stripping the sheets.
"The only thing we can control is the work we do. Nurse Fierro always says that. The rest is out of our hands."
No, Lucia was wrong, but Luce couldn't see how to correct her. Luce didn't understand much, but she understood that. Her life didn't have to be out of her hands. She could shape her own destiny. Somehow. She didn't have it all figured out yet, but she could feel a solution drawing nearer. How else would she have found herself here in the first place? How else would she have known now that it was time to move on? In the late morning light, a shadow stretched out from the supply closet in the corner. It looked like one she could use, but she wasn't entirely confident of her abilities to summon. She focused on it for a moment and waited to see the place where it wobbled. There. She watched it twitch. Fighting the disgust she still felt, she grabbed hold of it. Across the room, Lucia's focus was unbundling the bedsheets and trying hard not to show that she was still crying. Luce worked fast, drawing the announcer into a sphere, then working it out with her fingers more quickly than she ever had before. She held her breath, made a wish, and disappeared. 4. Time wounds all heals. Milan, Italy, May 25, 1918. Daniel felt guarded and on edge as he pushed out of the announcer. He was unpracticed at how to quickly make sense of the new time and place, not knowing exactly where he was or what he should do. Knowing that at least one version of Luce was bound to be nearby, bound to need him. The room was white. White sheets on the bed in front of him, white-framed window in the corner, bright white sunshine beating through the pane. For a moment, all was quiet. Then the chatter of memories rushed in. Milan. He was back in the hospital, where she'd been his nurse during the first of the mortal world wars. There, in the bed in the corner, was Traverti, his roommate from Salerno, who'd stepped on a landmine on his way to the canteen. Both of Traverti's legs had been burned and broken, but he was so charming he had all the nurses sneaking him bottles of whiskey. He'd always had a joke for Daniel. And there, on the other side of the room, was Max Porter, the Brit with a burned face, who never made a peep until he screamed and fell to pieces when they took his bandage off. Right now, both of Daniel's old roommates were far gone in morphine-induced afternoon naps. In the middle of the room was the bed where he'd lain after that bullet found his neck near the Piave riverfront. It was a stupid attack. They'd walked right into it. But Daniel had only enlisted in the war because Lucia was a nurse, so it was just as well. He rubbed at the place where he'd been hit. He could feel the pain almost as if it had happened yesterday. If Daniel had stuck around long enough to let the wound heal, the doctors would have been amazed by the absence of a scar. Today, his neck was smooth and flawless, as if he had never been shot. Over the years, Daniel had been beaten, battered, flung over balconies, shot in the neck and the gut and the leg, tortured over hot coals, and dragged through a dozen city streets. But a close study of every inch of his skin would reveal only two small scars, two fine white lines above his shoulder blades where his wings unfurled. All of the fallen angels acquired these scars when they took their human bodies. In a way, the scars were all any of them had to show for themselves. Most of the others reveled in their immunity to scarring. Well, except for Arian, but the scar on her neck was another story. But Cam and even Roland would pick the most gruesome fights with just about anyone on Earth. Of course, they never lost to mortals, but they seemed to like getting a little bit shattered on the way. In a couple of days, they knew they'd look flawless again. For Daniel, an existence without scars was just another indication that his destiny was out of his hands. Nothing he did ever made a dent. The weight of his own futility was crushing, especially when it came to Luce. And he suddenly remembered seeing her here, back in 1918. Luce. And he remembered fleeing the hospital. That was the one thing that could leave a scar on Daniel, on his soul. He'd been confused by seeing her back then, just as he was confused now. At the time, he'd thought there was no way that the mortal Lucinda should be able to do this, to run pell-mell through time, visiting her old selves. No way she should be alive at all. Now, of course, Daniel knew that something had changed with the life of Lucinda Price. But what was it? It started with her lack of covenant with heaven, but there was more. Why couldn't he figure it out? He knew the rules and parameters of the curse as well as he knew anything, so how could the answer elude him? Luce. She must have worked the change into her own past herself. The realization made his heart flutter. It must have happened during this very flight of hers, through the announcers. Of course, she must have shifted something to make all of this possible. But when? Where? How? Daniel could not interfere with any of it. He had to find her, just as he'd always promised he would. But he also had to make sure she managed to do whatever it was she had to do, worked whatever change into her past she needed to work, so that Lucinda Price, his Luce, could happen. Maybe if he could catch up with her, he could help. He could steer her toward the moment when she changed the rules of the game for all of them. He'd just missed her in Moscow, but he would find her in this life. He just had to figure out why she had landed here. There was always a reason, something held inside, in deep folds of her memory. Oh. His wings burned, and he felt ashamed. This life in Italy had been a dark and ugly death for her, one of the worst. He would never stop blaming himself for the horrible way she'd passed out of this life. But that was years after where Daniel stood today. This was the hospital where they'd first met, when Lucia was so young and lovely, innocent and saucy in the same breath. Here she'd loved him instantly and completely. Though she was too young for Daniel to show he loved her back, he had never discouraged her affection. She used to slip her hand inside his when they strolled under the orange trees in the Piazza della Repubblica, but when he squeezed her hand, she would blush. It always made him laugh, the way she could be so bold, then suddenly turn shy. She used to tell him that she wanted to marry him someday.
"You're back!"
Daniel spun around. He hadn't heard the door behind him opening. Lucia jumped when she saw him. She was beaming, showing a perfect row of tiny white teeth. Her beauty took his breath away. What did she mean, he was back? Ah, this was when he'd hidden from Luce, frightened of killing her by accident. He was not allowed to reveal anything to her. She had to discover the details for herself. Were he even to hint broadly, she would simply combust. Had he stayed, she might have grilled him and perhaps forced the truth out of him. He didn't dare. So his earlier self had run away. He must be in Bologna by now.
"Are you feeling all right?" Lucia asked, walking toward him. "You really should lie back down. Your neck."
She reached out to touch the place where he'd been shot over 90 years ago. Her eyes widened, and she drew back her hand. She shook her head.
"I thought I could have sworn..."
She began to fan her face with a stack of files she was holding. Daniel took her hand and led her to sit on the edge of the bed with him.
"Please," he said, "can you tell me, was there a girl here?"
"A girl just like you."
"Doria?" Lucia asked. "Your friend, with pretty short hair and the funny shoes?"
"Yes,"
Daniel exhaled.
"Can you show me where she is? It's very urgent."
Lucia shook her head. She couldn't stop staring at his neck.
"How long have I been here?" he asked.
"You just arrived last night," she said. "You don't remember?"
"Things are fuzzy," Daniel lied. "I must have taken a knock to the head."
"You were very badly wounded," she nodded. "Nurse Fiero didn't think you were going to make it until morning, when the doctors came."
"No," he remembered. "She didn't."
"But then you did, and we were all so glad. I think Doria stayed with you all night. Do you remember that?"
"Why would she do that?"
Daniel said sharply, startling Lucia. But of course Luce had stayed with him. Daniel would have done the same thing. At his side, Lucia sniffed. He'd upset her, when it was really himself he had to be angry with. He put an arm around her shoulder, feeling almost dizzy. How easy it was to fall in love with every moment of her existence. He made himself lean back to focus.
"Do you know where she is now?"
"She went away."
Lucia chewed on her lip nervously.
"After you left, she was upset, and she took off somewhere. But I don't know where."
So she had run away again already. What a fool Daniel was, plodding through time while Luce was racing. He had to catch her, though. Maybe he could help steer her toward that moment when she could make all the difference. Then he would never leave her side, never let any harm come to her, only be with her and love her always. He leaped up from the bed. He was at the door when the young girl's hand tugged him back.
"Where are you going?"
"I have to go."
"After her?"
"Yes."
"But you should stay a little longer."
Her palm was damp inside his.
"The doctors, they all said you need some rest," she said softly. "I don't know what's come over me. I just can't bear it if you go."
Daniel felt horrible. He pressed her small hand to his heart.
"We'll meet again."
"No."
She shook her head.
"My father said that, and my brother, and then they went to the war and they died. I don't have anyone left. Please don't go."
He couldn't bear to. but if he ever wanted to find her again, leaving now was his only chance. "When the war is over, you and I will meet again. You'll go to Florence one summer, and when you're ready, you will find me at the Boboli Gardens."
"I'll do what?"
"Right behind the Pitti Palace, at the end of Spider's Lane, where the hydrangeas bloom. Look for me."
"You must be feverish. This is crazy."
He nodded. He knew it was. He loathed that there was no alternative to setting this beautiful, sweet girl on such an ugly course. She had to go to the gardens then, just as Daniel had to go after Lucinda now.
"I will be there, waiting for you. Trust in that."
When he kissed her forehead, her shoulders began to shake with quiet sobs. Against every instinct, Daniel turned away, darting off to find an announcer that could take him back. 5. Off the Straight Path. Helston, England, June 18, 1854. Luce rocketed into the announcer like a car speeding out of control. She bounced and jostled against its shadowy sides, feeling as if she'd been thrown down a garbage chute. She didn't know where she was going or what she would find once she arrived, only that this announcer seemed narrower and less pliable than the last one, and was filled by a wet, whipping wind that drove her ever deeper into the dark tunnel. Her throat was dry, and her body was weary from not having slept in the hospital. With every turn, she felt more lost and unsure. What was she doing in this announcer? She closed her eyes and tried to fill her mind with thoughts of Daniel. The strong grasp of his hands, the burning intensity of his eyes, the way his whole face changed when she entered a room. The soft comfort of being wrapped in his wings, soaring high, the world and its worries far away. How foolish she'd been to run. That night in her backyard, stepping through the announcer had seemed like the right thing to do, the only thing to do. But why? Why had she done it? What stupid idea had made that seem like a smart move? And now she was far away from Daniel, from everyone she cared about, from anyone at all. And it was all her fault.
"You're an idiot," she cried into the dark.
"Hey, now,"
a voice called out. It was raspy and blunt and seemed to come from right beside her.
"No need to be insulting."
Luce went rigid. There couldn't be anyone inside the utter darkness of her announcer, right? She must be hearing things. She pushed forward, faster.
"Slow down, will ya?"
She caught her breath. Whoever it was didn't sound garbled or distant, like someone was speaking through the shadow. No, someone was in here, with her.
"Hello?"
she called, swallowing hard. No answer. The whipping wind in the announcer grew louder, howling in her ears. She stumbled forward in the dark, more and more afraid, until at last the noise of the air blowing past died out, and was replaced by another sound, a staticky roar. Something like waves crashing in the distance. No, the sound was too steady to be waves, Luce thought. A waterfall.
"I said slow down!"
Luce flinched. The voice was back, inches from her ear, and keeping pace with her as she ran. This time it sounded annoyed.
"You're not going to learn anything if you keep zipping around like that."
"Who are you? What do you want?"
she shouted.
"Oof!"
Her cheek collided with something cold and hard. The rush of a waterfall filled her ears, close enough that she could feel cool drops of spray on her skin.
"Where am I?"
"You're here. You're on pause. Ever heard of stopping to smell the peonies?"
"You mean roses?"
Luce felt around in the darkness, taking in a pungent mineral smell that wasn't unpleasant or unfamiliar, just confusing. She realized then that she hadn't yet stepped out of the announcer and back into the middle of a life, which could only mean she was still inside. It was very dark, but her eyes began to adjust. The announcer had taken on the form of some sort of small cave. There was a wall behind her, made of the same cool stone as the floor, with a depression cut into it where a stream of water trickled down. The waterfall she heard was somewhere above. And below her? 10 feet or so of stone ledge, and then nothing. Beyond that was blackness.
I had no idea you could do this, Luce whispered to herself.
What?
The hoarse voice said. Stop inside an announcer, she said. She hadn't been talking to him, and she still couldn't see him, and the fact that she'd ended up stalled wherever she was with whoever he was, well, it was definitely cause for alarm. But still, she couldn't help marveling at her surroundings.
I didn't know a place like this existed, an in-between place.
A phlegmy snort.
You could fill a book with all the things you don't know, girl. In fact, I think someone may have already written it. But that's neither here nor there.
A rattling cough.
And I did mean peonies, by the way.
Who are you?
Luce sat up and leaned back against the wall. She hoped whoever the voice belonged to couldn't see her legs trembling.
Oh, me? He asked. I'm just me. I'm here a lot.
Okay, doing what?
Oh, you know, hanging out.
He cleared his throat, and it sounded like someone gargling with rocks.
Well, I like it here, nice and calm. Some of these announcers can be such zoos, but not yours, Luce. Not yet, anyway.
I'm confused.
More than confused, Luce was afraid. Should she even be talking to this stranger? How did he know her name?
For the most part, I'm just your average casual observer, but sometimes I keep an ear out for travelers.
His voice came closer, causing Luce to shiver.
Like yourself. See, I've been around a while, and sometimes travelers, they need a smidge of advice. You been up by the waterfall yet? Very scenic. A+, as far as waterfalls go.
Luce shook her head.
But you said, this is my announcer? A message of my past. So why would you be...
Well, sorry.
The voice grew louder, indignant.
But may I just raise a question? If the channels to your past are so precious, why'd you leave your announcers wide open for all the world to jump inside? Hmm? Why didn't you just lock them?
I didn't...
Luce had no idea she'd left anything wide open, and no idea announcers could even be locked. She heard a small whoomp, like clothes or shoes being thrown into a suitcase, but she still couldn't see a thing.
I see I've overstayed my welcome. I won't waste your time.
The voice suddenly sounded choked up, and then, more softly, from a distance,
Goodbye.
The voice vanished into the darkness. It was nearly silent inside the announcer again. Just the soft cascade of the waterfall above. Just the desperate beat of Luce's heart. For just a moment, she hadn't been alone. With that voice there, she'd been nervous, alarmed, on edge. But she hadn't been alone.
Wait, she called, pushing herself to her feet.
Yes?
The voice was right back at her side.
I didn't mean to kick you out, she said.
For some reason, she wasn't ready for the voice to just disappear. There was something about him. He knew her. He had called her by name.
I just wanted to know who you were.
Oh, hell, he said, a little giddy. You can call me Bill.
Bill, she repeated, squinting to see more than the dim cave walls around her. Are you invisible?
Sometimes. Not always. Certainly don't have to be. Why, you'd prefer to see me?
It might make things a little bit less weird.
Doesn't that depend on what I look like?
Well, Luce started to say.
So,
his voice sounded as if he were smiling.
What do you want me to look like?
I don't know.
Luce shifted her weight. Her left side was damp from the spray of the waterfall.
Is it really up to me? What do you look like when you're just being yourself?
Well, I have a range. You'd probably want me to start with something cute. Am I right?
I guess.
Okay, the voice muttered. Hummina, 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 hum.
What are you doing? Luce asked.
Putting on my face.
There was a flash of light, a blast that would have sent Luce tumbling backward if the wall hadn't been right behind her. The flash died down into a tiny ball of cool white light, By its illumination, she could see the rough expanse of a gray stone floor beneath her feet. A stone wall stretched up behind her, water trickling down its face. And something more. There, on the floor in front of her, stood a small gargoyle.
"Ta-da!" he said.
He was about a foot tall, crouched low with his arms crossed and his elbows resting on his knees. His skin was the color of stone. He was stone, but when he waved at her, she could see he was limber enough to be made of flesh and muscle. He looked like the sort of statue you'd find capping the roof of a Catholic church. His fingernails and toenails were long and pointed, like little claws. His ears were pointed, too, and pierced with small stone hoops. He had two little horn-like nubs protruding from the top of a forehead that was fleshy and wrinkled. His large lips were pursed in a grimace that made him look like a very old baby.
"So you're Bill?" "That's right," he said. "I'm Bill."
Bill was an odd-looking thing, but certainly not someone to be afraid of. Luce circled him and noticed the ridged vertebrae protruding from his spine, and the small pair of gray wings tucked behind his back so that the two tips were twined together.
"What do you think?" he asked.
"Great," she said flatly. One look at any other pair of wings, even Bill's, made her miss Daniel so much her stomach hurt. Bill stood up. It was strange to see the arms and legs that were made of stone move like muscle.
"You don't like the way I look. I can do better," he said, disappearing in another flash of light. "Hold on."
Flash. Daniel stood before her, cloaked in a shining aura of violet light. His unfurled wings were glorious and massive, beckoning her to step inside them. He held out a hand, and she sucked in her breath. She knew something was strange about his being there, that she'd been in the middle of doing something else. Only she couldn't recall what or with whom. Her mind felt hazy, her memory obscured. But none of that mattered. Daniel was here. She wanted to cry with happiness. She stepped toward him and put her hand in his.
"There," he said softly. "Now, that's the reaction I was after."
"What?" Luce whispered, confused. Something was rising to the forefront of her mind, telling her to pull away. But Daniel's eyes overrode that hesitation, and she let herself be pulled in, forgetting everything but the taste of his lips.
"Kiss me!"
His voice was a raspy croak. "Bill's." Luce screamed and jumped back. Her mind felt jolted as if from a deep sleep. What had happened? How had she thought she'd seen Daniel in... Bill. He'd tricked her. She jerked her hand away from his. Or maybe he dropped hers during the flash when he changed into a large, warty toad. He croaked out two ribbits, then hopped over to the spring of water dripping down the cave wall. His tongue shot out into the stream. Luce was breathing hard and trying not to show how devastated she felt.
"Stop it," she said sharply. "Just go back to the gargoyle. Please." "As you wish."
Flash. Bill was back, crouched low with his arms crossed over his knees, still as stone.
"I thought you'd come around," he said.
Luce looked away, embarrassed that he had gotten a rise out of her, angry that he seemed to have enjoyed it.
"Now that that's all settled," he said,
scurrying around so he was standing where she could see him again.
"What would you like to learn first?"
"From you? Nothing. I have no idea what you're even doing here."
"I've upset you," Bill said, snapping his stone fingers. "I'm sorry. I was just trying to learn your tastes. You know, likes. Daniel Grigori and cute little gargoyles." He listed on his fingers. "Dislikes. Frogs. I think I've got it now. No more of that funny business from me."
He spread his wings and flitted up to sit on her shoulder. He was heavy.
"Just the tricks of the trade," he whispered.
"I don't need any tricks."
"Come now. You don't even know how to lock an announcer to keep out the bad guys. Don't you want to at least know that?"
Luce raised an eyebrow at him.
"Why would you help me?" "You're not the first to skip around the past, you know, and everybody needs a guide. Lucky you, you chanced upon me. You could have gotten stuck with Virgil."
"Virgil?" Luce asked, having a flashback to sophomore English. As in the guy who led Dante through the nine circles of hell?
That's the one. He's so by the book. It's a snooze.
Anyway, you and I aren't sojourning through hell right now, he explained with a shrug.
Tourist season.
Luce thought back to the moment she'd seen Lushka burst into flames in Moscow, to the raw pain she'd felt when Lucia had told her Daniel had disappeared from the hospital in Milan. Sometimes it feels like hell, she said.
That's only because it took us this long to be introduced.
Bill extended his stony little hand toward hers. Luce stalled.
So what, side are you on?
Bill whistled.
Hasn't anyone told you it's more complicated than that? That the boundaries between good and evil have been blurred by millennia of free will?
I know all that, but...
Look, if it makes you feel any better, have you ever heard of the scale?
Luce shook her head.
Sort of like hall monitors within announcers who make sure travelers get where they're going. Members of the scale are impartial, so there's no siding with heaven or with hell. Okay?
Okay, Luce nodded. So you're in the scale? Bill winked.
Now we're almost there, so...
Almost where?
To the next life you're traveling to, the one that casts this shadow we're in.
Luce ran her hand through the water, running down the wall. This shadow, this announcer, is different.
If it is, it's only because that's what you want it to be. If you want a rest-stop-type cave inside an announcer, it appears for you.
I didn't want a rest-stop.
No, but you needed one. Announcers can pick up on that. Also, I was here helping out, wanting it on your behalf.
The little gargoyle shrugged, and Luce heard a sound like boulders knocking against each other.
The inside of an announcer isn't any place at all. It's a neverwhere, the dark echo cast by something in the past. Each one is different, adapting to the needs of its travelers, so long as they're inside.
There was something wild about the idea of this echo of Luce's past, knowing what she wanted or needed better than she did.
So how long do people stay inside? She asked. Days? Weeks? No time. Not the way you're thinking. Within announcers, real time doesn't pass at all. But still, you don't want to hang around here too long. You could forget where you're going, get lost forever. Become a hoverer. And that's ugly business. These are portals, remember, not destinations.
Luce rested her head against the damp stone wall. She didn't know what to make of Bill.
This is your job, serving as a guide to, travelers like me? Sure, exactly.
Bill snapped his fingers, the friction sending up a spark.
You nailed it.
How did a gargoyle like you get stuck doing this?
Excuse me, I take pride in my work.
I mean, who hired you? Bill thought for a moment, his marble eyes rolling back and forth in their sockets.
Think of it as a volunteer position. I'm good at announcer travel, is all. No reason not to spread my expertise around.
He turned her with his palm cupping his stony chin.
When are we going to, anyway?
When are we? Luce stared at him, confused.
You have no idea, do you?
He slapped his forehead.
You're telling me that you dove out of the present without any fundamental knowledge about stepping through? That how you end up when you end up is a complete mystery to you?
How was I supposed to learn? Luce said. No one told me anything. Bill fluttered down from her shoulder and paced along the ledge.
You're right, you're right. We'll just go back to basics.
He stopped in front of Luce, tiny hands on his thick hips.
So, here we go. What is it that you want?
I want to be with Daniel, she said slowly. There was more, but she wasn't sure how to explain it.
Huh.
Bill looked even more dubious than his heavy brow, stone lips, and hooked nose made him look naturally.
The hole in your argument there, counselor, is that Daniel was already right there beside you and you skipped out of your own time. Was he not?
Luce slid down the wall and sat, feeling another strong rush of regret. I had to leave. He wouldn't tell me anything about our past, so I had to go find out for myself. She expected Bill to argue with her more, but he simply said, "So, you're telling me you're on a quest?" Luce felt a faint smile cross her lips. A quest. She liked the sound of that.
"So you do want something, see?"
Bill clapped.
"Okay, first thing you ought to know is that the announcers are summoned to you based upon what's going on in here."
He thumped his stony fist against his chest.
"They're kind of like little sharks drawn by your deepest desires."
"Right." Luce remembered the shadows at Shoreline, how it was almost as though the specific announcers had chosen her, and not the other way around.
"So when you step through, the announcers that seem to quiver before you, begging you to pick them up, they funnel you to the place your soul longs to be."
"So the girl I was in Moscow, and in Milan, and all the other lives I glimpsed before I knew how to step through, I wanted to visit them?"
"Precisely.